It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
We're back. It's To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell.
And I'm Liam Del Carme.
And yeah, we're going to kick off straight away. This weekend we saw one of the most unbelievable rugby games that we've seen for a while, or in, at least in a month or two since the Lions played in Connacht at Ellis Park on Saturday, where the Lions came back from the dead and with 14 men smashed. I think that's a good word there. Glasgow Warriors. Yeah. So, and we've got a special guest here with us to take us through that. The man who's as young as the youngsters in his team, Willem Alberts. Welcome, Willem.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's an honor and privilege to chat to you guys.
So, Willem, you just had a birthday last week. I thought about singing you happy birthday, but decided not to.
Oh, no.
Partly because of my voice, but other than, I'm sure everybody else sang you happy birthday. I think you turned a very young 40 last week.
Yeah, obviously, it's a big milestone in birthday years. I don't really feel it at the moment, but yeah, sometimes when I wake up on a Sunday, I feel older than 40, I think.
Is that milestone something that the birthday, the 40th birthday, is that something that you've been dreading, or is it something that you're embracing?
I think as a youngster, you dread that, because normally as a 23, 5 or 30 year old rugby player, when you're 40, you're finished. So, I mean, that's you're dreading it for that reason. But to still be able to play, I think I'm embracing it all the way. I don't feel a day over 25 mixing with these young guys every single day. So, no, I think I'm embracing it.
Go to Saturday's game. It was amazing to watch, obviously, from the sidelines. And just to see the guys, I mean, I actually sat there laughing because I couldn't believe it. I enjoyed it a lot to see you guys beat Glasgow like that. But just maybe take us inside just the thought process there. You guys were down to 14 men, coming to halftime, you're behind on the scoreboard. It looks like almost your season is going away from you as such. What was sitting in the change room, and what did you guys believe at that stage?
Obviously, just before halftime, we got that yellow card, and we were down to 13, and then we defended a ball right on our try line, which we stopped. I think that gave the guys massive confidence and belief running up the tunnel for halftime. And obviously, before the game, we knew he's one of their strengths. They have scored many more tries during this season. So that gave us a lot of confidence running up the tunnel. And then at halftime, I can't remember exactly what was said. It's kind of a blur, but I know my message to the guys was just, we've got 40 minutes to give everything we have, and it doesn't matter what the score says at the end of the game. If we just give everything, then we can walk off the field with respect for each other and knowing we did our best. And then suddenly around the 50-minute mark, things just started to happen.
Willem, you guys achieved the win. I mean, it was backs to the wall. Everybody had to work a little bit harder. You punished Glasgow from turnover ball and ran in tries from deep. The way in which you achieved it must be something that gives that squad a huge amount of belief if you your game ahead against the Stormers Saturday week.
Yeah, I think obviously sometimes you also have to be realistic. Sometimes the bounce of the ball or a ref's call can make a huge difference. And during that time in the game when it did go away, we still did the job to get the tries and to turn the game around. So I think there's times during our season where we were in the same mindset of just fighting and giving it our all on the field. And I think the fans and the people can see that this Lions team likes to play rugby and play for each other and to leave it out on the field. And this on this day, everything just clicked. So, looking forward to the Stormers game. Obviously, like the last game, it's almost like a playoff for us. One slip up and the season is maybe finished. So, I think that kind of makes it easier just to go out and and leave it out all on the field and don't worry about the result, because that will happen in any case. So I think it's we can look forward to the game. It's going to be a big one, and it's like a final for us.
Willem, I mean, obviously your career's changed. You're now in the twilight of your career, if I can put it that way. I think every rugby player probably starts out wanting to become a Springbok. Then you become a Springbok like you did. You play, then you go off and you play overseas for a while and you come back. And obviously, while there's still the love for the Springboks and the inkling of hope that maybe one day they'll come knocking on your door again, you probably realize that those days are in the past as such. How does it feel now to sit and to obviously watch everything that happens in the Bok teams, knowing you were there and you know how it is in the change rooms and obviously the chasing the sun that we see from the outside? But, I mean, just from your point of view, how's that been, that journey been, and sort of almost knowing that your career is starting to come to a close now?
Yeah, obviously becoming a Springbok and or playing to become one is massive, and then to actually achieve that dream is unbelievable. It's indescribable. You can't really describe it to somebody who hasn't gone through the same thing. And being in a Bok mix for a long time and then going overseas, knowing it's kind of over now. But you always remain a Springbok in your heart, and you just want the team to do well for themselves, for the Springbok, and for the country. On the outside, just being a Springbok supporter now for the last couple of years, it's been amazing what they have achieved, and it makes us incredibly proud. And wish them all the best for every single game coming up.
You must have thought when you started your test career that, this isn't too difficult. I think there were tries in your first three tests on that end-of-year tour. Tell us about those initial emotions. I mean, getting picked for the Boks and then obviously going on that tour, and by and large, it was a fairly successful tour.
Yeah, I mean, I went from the Lions to the Sharks in 2010, and then 2010 had a very good season with the Sharks. And I think, firstly, the emotion of winning the Curry Cup in the Shark Tank, and then still during celebrations in the change room with my family, and the team saw my name on the TV. That was quite amazing and also like surreal for me. And then having a big party that night to celebrate the Curry Cup win, and then on the next morning onto the plane to Joburg, to a Springbok camp. I mean, it happened so quickly. And it was almost like it was living in a dream, really, because it happened so quickly and so fast. And from the Curry Cup win, moving on to into the Bok setup, touring with the Springboks, being part of something unbelievable, and then getting to play my first game, going up, I think my first touch, almost scoring a try. So it was, it's like a fairy tale. I can't really describe it.
And obviously your nickname, the Bone Collector, I mean, you've picked that up for along the while. Still putting in a few big hits there every now and again. That must be nice to have that. And I mean, how did that come about? Maybe give us the story behind that as well.
I still try to give the big hits, but I see the guys gym much more these days, so they're a lot stronger. It's much more difficult to tackle them with big hits. It probably comes from an old varsity nickname when I played a game for the Kosais that I was in called Sonop, and in one game I tackled two guys off the field, and one of my friends, the Bone Collector, didn't quite stick, and somewhere in the Springbok setup, through Yanni du Plessis, who was my roommate and knew a bit more about me, the nickname came out. And I think it was a Sports Illustrated article where a guy wrote about it, and since then it was public, so that's how it came about.
Willem, you were almost at the, even before your career started, you were almost lost to rugby because you were a very, very I was going to say handy cricketer, but probably better than that. You were a very good cricketer. And Eugene Eloff, your former coach, tells the story of how you were kind of set to go and play cricket in Pretoria. But then your paths crossed in Margate or somewhere, and things changed.
Yeah, obviously, I think I had an opportunity to go to the Lions while I was still in school to play for them on a 19 rugby. And I was still in matric and I wanted to get good marks and I wanted to play cricket. I was a captain of the school cricket team and I wanted to see if I can make Transvaal schools in both rugby and cricket. So, yeah, at that stage, I chose not to play for the Lions on the 19th and stay and play cricket for my school and get good matric results. And only a couple of years later, then when I joined the Lions, obviously, in the under-20 setup, the rugby journey really started for me. I always believed when I was at school, I'm a better cricketer than a rugby player, but obviously it turned out otherwise.
You could have collected scalps instead of bones.
maybe.
and there's a lot more money to be made in the IPL nowadays, I suppose. I mean, those days it never was that way, but I think a lot of players might make a different choice nowadays with the amount of money in the IPL. So.
Yeah, obviously. Look, and I always thought you can play cricket for longer, but I can still play rugby, so I really don't mind.
Willem, you were also a TV star before you became a rugby player or cricket player. You were as a child in the documentary, I remember. Is that still going on? Every 7 years, things?
Yeah. Unfortunately, in COVID times, it was supposed to be the 35 up part of the documentary. And because of COVID, it wasn't filmed. I was still in chats. I was still in France at the time or the year before. Before they wanted to shoot the documentary, so there were still talks about it. It kind of died down at the moment. It's been quiet. I think the director that's here in South Africa has been busy on another very big project. But I still think maybe there will be plans in the near future to continue with that.
Yeah, just I mean the background. They filmed you as a 7-year-old, I believe, right? And then every 7 years. They go back and they see where you are and within a bunch of other kids as well.
Yes, so I think the program's name, I think it started in the UK. It's called 7 Up, and then they choose like 20 children out of different races, different languages, different cultures throughout the country, and then they film them, ask them more or less the same questions, and then. Yeah, I do that every 7 years to see what's the change and the growth in the child's lives.
Well, when you look back at your professional career, would have started what sort of 2005, 2006, around about there, and you compare it to now. I mean, do you look at the professional game now as something that is completely different to what you encountered when you set out?
Yeah, I think. I think it has changed a lot, and I think you can compare it when you have a child and the child grows up. Obviously, it's a baby, and then the baby starts to crawl and walk, and in a couple of years' time, it talks. But when you're the parent, when you're involved in it every single day, you don't see that change happening a lot because it's a constant movement, and you move with it. And I think it's the same. It's like now when I take my phone and I look at my girls who's 8 and 11 almost now, and I look at their baby photos, I almost can't remember how time went by so quickly. And I think it's the same in your rugby career. I think if I think back at 2005 and 6 and 7, and I think to now, it just feels like time has flown by so quickly. It doesn't feel like 18 or 19 years, it just feels like 1 or 2 years. But yeah, and a lot has changed, but because you changed with it the whole time, it doesn't feel like a massive change. But I mean, if you go and look at a 2007 Super Rugby game, the quality and how it's played, it has changed so much. But in that moment, it felt like the best rugby and the quickest and the hardest rugby ever. And then when I play now, it feels the same.
You've had a lot of teammates, and you mentioned Yanni Duplessis, and I know he must be one of the funnier guys to roommate with because he just generally is not that serious at times. If you think back now all your career, your teammates that you enjoyed your times with, et cetera, who were the jokers, who were the ones will stand out? I know there's a lot of them, so just maybe one or two that you remember.
I've got a, I think I can make a massive list. Obviously, in the notable campaigns and teams, there's obviously different characters. I'm a big team man, and I really try to make an effort to be a team man for every guy on my team. So I get along with, I think, most people. It's one of my skills is to get along with a lot of people. But yeah, I think the last it was the guys like the two Kobus, Krobbelaar and Krobler and Krobbelaar, Baywatch and Farkwond, like they were called. Pity Ferreira, Andre Petueres, Jacques Fourie, and some of the younger guys who played with me was Heinke and Janu Vermaak and Gerard Mostert, who's still one of my best friends to this day. Doppies, guys like that. We were also a nice, great bunch of players in my first professional environment. And then moving to the Sharks, guys like Jan, Ryan Kankowski, Pat Lambie, Sean McLeod, JP Peterson. That was a really special team. And time in Sharks rugby as well. We had a very good team. Playing with legends like, Franz Steyn, and all those guys, and then moving to France, playing for Stade Français, guys like Sergio Parisse, who's a world-class player. Will Guinea played with Morne Steyn, also in the box. So now I can make a list of
Who did you play with that you thought, geez, I would hate to play against this guy?
There's a lot of guys, obviously, in the box setup. It's guys like Akis, Eben, Dani Resto, and unfortunately, I had to play them because they were the Bulls when I started out at the Lions. So, Stolt Berger as well. It was never fun. Playing against those guys, but it was very nice to play with them.
Willem, I remember touring in 2013, 2014, around there in Australia with you, and I had an enviable task of finding braai recipes from Springbok rugby players for a sponsor that asked me. And I remember when I spoke to De Jong Borchardt, who was you guys' media guy at that stage, the first guy he pointed to was you and Yanni. And funny enough, Kuni Oosthuizen. Obviously, away from the field, your guy likes a braai quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I love to braai. I think at least two or three times a week, I will light a fire and braai something. My family, luckily, they like, I can make different things on the braai, so they're not too worried about. They can get their chicken, meat, or fish or lamb, whatever they want, and I just love to cook it or to braai. That's a part of my culture and who I am, and I like it. So, yeah, even with a box, I remember 2015 staying in a very grand resort in England, and I missed the braai, and I went to the nearest supermarket with my stipends, my allowance for the off day, and I bought a little disposable braai and some meat, and I weren't allowed to make fire at the resort, so I waited until it was dark. And then there was a little magic golf course, and I walked in the dark onto the golf course and sat on one of the tee boxes and during the year. So that was quite fun.
Good effort. When you moved to Stade Français, how did your I don't want to say eating habits, but I mean, how did you change anything in your diet and also what you drank? I mean, did that change fundamentally or not?
Yeah, little bit different, but they're also proud about the good guys. Really adapt a new way of living and the new culture that I was in. That's also the quickest way to get accepted by the French people, is not to try to be a South African and do your South African ways and tell them their ways is not good. So, I still ride a lot, probably more in France than over here. But now I love their food. I changed my habits a little bit because they eat pasta dry. They don't have sauces and things on it like that. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn how to eat pasta with just a bit of olive oil and a bit of Parmesan cheese. So that changed my eating habits a little bit. But I found a butcher with very, very good meat. So yeah, I still had proper meat and had proper braise every week in France.
I have to say, yeah, if you go into a typical steakhouse in Paris, the steaks they cut there are not quite what we are used to.
No, it's like a thin piece of paper almost, and then you pay a lot. No, yeah,
28 euros.
Yeah. So now I met a butcher, and I must say he gave us a special price as well on the meat if you buy in bulk. So I had to buy a freezer. Mm. The one time a French player, one of my teammates visited me at my house, he asked, what is that? Because I think he only saw it in movies where they put in corpses in horror movies. And I had to show him where I put all my meat. And they always laughed and joke about it. But through the years, a couple of them came to my house to learn how to make biltong and to have a proper braai as well.
You had to be careful there because the bone collector bit would have had to be explained.
Yeah, for sure. But no, I told them. I told them that it was only cut up meat.
Well, I'll say, I mean, you obviously at some point going to stop playing now. Have you decided what you're going to be doing afterwards, or have you got plans for the future yet?
Yeah, obviously, it feels to me like the last 5 years was every time was my last year, and I didn't really have a plan what I wanted to do after rugby. And I love sports, and I love the outdoors and wildlife and agriculture. So, but yeah, since about two years ago, I met up with a gentleman who he's in the agricultural business. He kind of proposed something to me, and it's been happening over the last 2 years. And hopefully, in the next couple of weeks, we can finalize that. I also had one or two other offers from other businesses. Which I need to decide very quickly in which direction I want to go. Obviously, it's a massive decision for me because it will affect the rest of my life after rugby. So, yeah, it's a very difficult decision for me, but hopefully I can find one and make a good living after rugby as well, and also still stay in rugby maybe in a certain capacity because I love the game and... the game has given a lot to me, and I always want to give back as well.
Can players in your situation ever feel 100% prepared for life after you stop playing?
Well, I think the young guys look at me and say, yes, he's played so long, he must have made a lot of money, he'll be fine. But I think as a player being on the verge of ending my career, I don't ever think you feel like that time is right now to do something new, unless you maybe study to be a doctor or a lawyer and you know you're going in a certain direction, or if your parents maybe have a big company can work and you'll know, listen, I'm going to start at this point, this will be my salary, and I can organize my life around that. But if you don't really know, I mean, that uncertainty always plays a role of not knowing or not making it easy to say, yes, we're going to do this or that, and it will be fine. So there's always that little bit of doubt that will keep on reminding you that, listen, there's a big change coming and still hard work that needs to be done.
And do you have a to-do list? Is there something that you would love to do now that you may have a little bit of time to do it, whether it's travel or whatever it is?
Yeah, I think I would love to be able to plan my weekends for a whole year ahead. I think to maybe have off on weekends to plan some fishing and hunting trips around the school sports and some travel with my family. I really love to travel with my family, and it'll be just be nice to be able to plan ahead to do those kind of things, because normally it's last minute, pack up and go somewhere and do something. So it's always fun, but it'll be nice to plan a bit.
Willem, I mean, we plan our year ahead anyway. We know every weekend we have a rugby game, unfortunately. I mean, so I think we know exactly what you mean. You sort of get those off weeks, like a week like this one, when the teams you're covering is not playing, and you make sure that you use it. And I'm sure you guys are exactly the same. So.
Yeah, I know exactly. But in rugby, you always have to wait until the last minute, because you have a little niggle. Even if you're off time, you have to do some preparation to get that ready, or... and my off times, if it's not school holidays, or if I'm off like now, I'm off for a couple of days, but then I'm just doing the normal school run or trying to do some things at my house that I don't get time normally for.
Well, I think from my side, Willem, I think I've asked all my questions. I just want to say good luck, and hopefully you guys get the chance against the Stormers to obviously pull that one through and have a couple extra games. And hopefully see off the season on the high. So,
thank you very much. Every game is my last game, so I'm just giving it 100% every time.
Yeah, and from my side as well, thanks very much for everything. Thanks for the entertainment. It was wonderful watching the Bone Collector from afar. Our teams play against the Springboks with you in the team, and they put up a fantastic fight for the first 60 minutes. But Willem Alberts keeps coming, and you can see their desire kind of goes away after a while. So, yeah, thanks for the memories, and good luck in the next phase of your life.
Yeah,
thank you very much, guys. Always a pleasure to chat with you over the years, and thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To the Last Drop podcast.
Well, that was certainly very insightful from Willem, and that is definitely one of rugby's greatest characters out there. And I think we're all going to miss him a bit when he's gone, but hopefully he's still involved somehow, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a man who has built up a bit of a social media following with his dance moves. I don't think anybody saw that coming when he started out, but yeah, that is something that has developed. And yeah, hopefully he will stay involved in the game. I can see him sort of still in a coach's box somewhere.
Well, he'd be a good media officer. I could see him do that. Maybe we can convince him, because I think it would be rather fun for us if we had him around.
We might even have the return of a media hunt at some point.
Yeah, those are big stories in their own, and they haven't happened for a long time.
Yeah, maybe with good reason.
Probably. So, obviously, we got to look a bit back at the games of the weekend. We're not going to focus too much on URC because it's a big EPCR weekend coming up. But if you look at that, I mean, the Lions were absolutely fantastic. The Bulls were exceptional in there. And suddenly we had a couple of interesting results that left the Bulls second, the Stormers in a much stronger position, and even the outside possibility of four teams in next season's Champions Cup.
Yes, there is the outside chance of that. A few things will have to fall into place for that to happen, but it's a possibility. For that to happen, obviously the Lions would have to win and maybe get a bonus point against the Stormers, who are already in. And then, of course, the Sharks will have to win the Challenge Cup final. So it is within the realms of possibility. But the Lions sneaking probably the longer shot.
Yeah, I sort of worked it out that because Edinburgh and Benetton play each other, one of them, obviously whoever wins there needs not to get a bonus point, because that'll help. And then Ulster,
yeah, because the Lions don't have enough wins. Yeah, that's the problem.
And Ulster need to lose against Munster without a bonus point, and then the Lions could sneak into seventh spot. It's a very unlikely scenario, but as you say, it is possible. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think the Stormers at this stage, I mean, they are safe in terms of getting fourth. I think, yeah, that I think they've kind of given up on that a couple of weeks ago already, actually.
Yeah, and I think the one good thing of it, of course, is that with the Bulls now second after the weekend's results, after Glasgow lost and Leinster lost, which was quite a surprise, it means that we're almost out of danger of having that Stormers Bulls quarterfinal, which nobody really wants, unless the Lions go beat the Stormers next week and the Bulls stay at second and the Stormers, I think, finish seventh if that happens. Lots to still talk about, but we'll talk about a lot more of that next week, I reckon.
Yeah, but if we look back at last week's weekend's games, I think the one at Ellenbosch was probably the most, certainly exhilarating in that second half, with the Lions playing with just 14 players from minute 36. And then, of course, lost another man to the bin with a yellow card two minutes later. So they were very much up against it at the start of the second half against Glasgow Warriors. Fine effort to come back.
Definitely. And as I said to when Willem chatted, I was that there, I couldn't help but laugh quite a bit at just the way it happened, because it just was just really, really champagne rugby. And when the Lions play like that, they're beautiful to watch.
In fact, I asked the question of Franco after the game, because they turned over. They kept carrying the ball into Lions territory, got turned over, and then the Lions would really steal the counter-attack. I posed the question in a roundabout way whether, those tactics after they got the first couple of times, whether it was prudent to persist with it. But he's quite happy with that element of their play, that, that they have a go. It's in their DNA now. But it did give the Lions a lot of credit for, the way they turned them over and then were able to score those tries. And, of course, he lamented the fact that they weren't accurate enough. Glasgow weren't accurate enough. But that the tactic was the right one.
No, I'm sure you would. And, I mean, look, they've got Zebra in their last game. They're going to get 5 points out of that one. I don't think anybody doubts that. So, yeah, they'll hope that somebody else slips up somewhere in that last game, the Bulls against the Sharks or Munster against Ulster, and then they can sneak back into top spot. So there's a lot that can still happen around there.
Absolutely.
But we're in an EPCR week, which means that there is the Investec Champions Cup final taking place, and obviously the one from a South African point of view, the EPCR Challenge Cup final, where the Sharks play Gloucester. I think let's first talk about the Sharks. That game against Cardiff on Saturday, I had the misfortune of having to do that game. And it was the same time as the Stormers game, and you guys were in the press conference after the Lions game. So you didn't miss much, is what I'm trying to tell you. It really felt like a team of my colleague Gavin Rich say, it felt like a team of youngsters, people you'd forgotten that was contracted to the Sharks, and people left standing around at practice. And they certainly played that way, because it was just so disjointed, and there's no cohesion in that team. And I think there's going to be quite a few of those players leaving by the end of the season.
I thought you were going to bring in the Sharks tackle bags as well at some point there as you were building up. I didn't catch any of that as it unfolded live, unfortunately. But I think it was quite clear even before kickoff. I mean, they sent an advance party of 21 players that flew out on Saturday night. And that makes it clear that that is not their focus. Their focus is obviously the Challenge Cup final. But you would still expect, their reserve strength to put up a good show at home, at least look like, that the Sharks have a way of playing and that they, that they lay it all out there.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised, because, I mean, I even saw Anthony Fullmonk on the bench, which I had actually forgotten he was still contracted to the Sharks. Nothing against Anthony, but he's just a player that you haven't seen for the probably last two seasons around. So that just tells you everything. But looking at Gloucester, they've got a tough task, because, I mean, even if it is in London at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, beautiful stadium, but that is still technically home ground for Gloucester, because they're not too far from home. And they had a good win against Newcastle on the weekend. So they'll definitely be up for the game and looking for silverware, and they seem to be final specialists. What's their sixth final in the last 8 years or something like
that? They lost two So it's not a compelling record, but I mean they do tend to make it to this final. So I think that will count for something, the fact that they've been there before. The Sharks, if we talk about intercontinental finals, if you think back to Super Rugby, they obviously don't have a good record there. In fact, you could probably label them as the best team in Super Rugby never to have won it, because they always, you know, get to the semifinals in the time of the final. And I think they'll be very keen to get this little monkey off their back.
Yeah, no, definitely. I feel, because I always think to Sean Everett still believes that last season that was interrupted by COVID was the one they were on top when the season was abruptly ended by the pandemic. And he still believes that was the season they would have gone all the way. And yeah, I suppose it's hard to argue because you can make any argument for that one. But they certainly were looking good. I think the one worry is that Konyo Am has been ruled out. There's some doubt about Ethan Hooker. They should be able to still put a very, very strong side into the field. But yeah, I mean, a final's a final. A final's about taking your chances.
Yeah. And you would hope that they aren't as, I'm going to use the word passive. In stages of that semi-final against Clermont, they were backpedaling and there was a lot coming their way. A couple of breaches in defense. But good on them for turning that around in the second half. I mean, Clermont gradually sort of had the energy, sort of the wind taken out of their sails by the persistent Sharks defense. And of course, later or deep into that game, there were a few opportunities for the Sharks and they took it splendidly. So, they will probably have to absorb a fair amount of pressure in the final as well. But you would hope that they, by halftime, that they have a firm footing in that game and they don't leave it for the last moment.
I'd hope they'd be a bit more direct and use their forwards because they've got a very good forward pack there and that should be their strength. There were some defensive lapses out wide. You'd hope that they would have fixed that by now. I think just in terms of what it would probably mean for a South African team to win the EPCR Challenge Cup. And I suppose there is the debate about, it's obviously not the one you want to win because that's the Champions Cup. But I think just that sort of success in Europe would be, I wouldn't say monumental, but it'll be a huge, huge thing for South African sides to say, okay, we've arrived. We're part of this competition. We've had so many debates over the last couple of years about whether South African team should be there. We keep on hearing the French don't like us being in the competition. And there's always this persistent sort of chattering about in certain columnists in the UK media as well tend to come up with it every now and again as well. I just think from a South African point of view, that will almost be the way to cement it. Okay, we're staying. That's it. I don't know if you agree.
I suppose the short answer to that, without dwelling on it for too long, is that once you've got your name etched on the trophy, it cannot be taken away from you. So in that sense, South Africa will make its presence felt. I think that debate will probably die down, in the not-too-distant future, hopefully. I just wanted to get back at something we spoke about a little earlier, and that was the Sharks' defense. I spoke to their defense coach, Joey Mongalo, last week, a little over a week ago, and he made the point about the challenges they faced early season. Obviously, there were a number of players missing, whether it was through international commitments or whether through injury, and that they had sort of started a defense system and got a lot of players on the same page. But then once those experienced players came back and others coming back from injury, they had to sort of find a happy medium that now obviously takes time to bed down. And clearly that over time has improved. Now and then there's still the odd little flare up. But that kind of thing was always going to take a little bit of time. But I think what we've seen in the games where the Sharks have played well is that when they apply themselves, I mean, they're one of the more difficult teams to breach.
Yeah, and I mean, especially that scrum of theirs when it gets going, Oxenchair, Vincent Koch, those type of players, I mean, they certainly can press home an advantage. And even Etzebeth, I mean, there's no better player in world rugby that can impose himself on opposition. So I'm very interested to see how this goes on Saturday. Yeah, I've always backed the Sharks, but yeah, it's probably because we don't actually know, we don't watch enough of Gloucester to know exactly how good they are.
I have a decent feeling about the Sharks. If you look at the talent that they have at their disposal, I mean, if the bulk of that squad play to their potential, I think they should have this game won. The obvious drawback would be the experience that Gloucester have in this competition that they've built up over the years. So they'll obviously try and take the Sharks to awkward places and dark places. But you know, if your oxen chairs and your ebon etzebets and so on, if they play to their potential, I mean, the Sharks should actually win this game by a few points.
They should, but as we all know, rugby is a funny game. The ball bounces differently, and some of the most bizarre things can happen when you least expect it. And I think both of us have been around for a very long time, and there's still stuff that surprises us that happens in games. And that's the magic of the sport. So, but yeah, then turning into the bigger game, I say the bigger game, not from a South African viewpoint, but yeah, the two most decorated sides in European history. Nine stars between them, Leinster against Toulouse, and a fascinating clash of styles, and a fascinating to see how both teams are coming into this game, and really a clash of the heavyweights.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the organizer's dream, I suppose, at this the season. Absolutely the two heavyweights. I haven't tasted success in this competition for a few years. So in both cases, Toulouse and Leinster will be desperate to get the next star. They've rather been overtaken by La Rochelle in recent years. But this is now obviously a proper opportunity to sort of reaffirm their status, you know, among the greats of the European game. So you're right about being a fascinating final. That, you know, if you look at the contrasting styles, in some ways, they don't contrast that much. But if you look at Leinster, certainly they are a side that are happy to keep the ball. Whereas Toulouse, they tend to play in fits and starts, and they'll use the tactical kicking game, and they'll thunder up front through those heavy hitters. And then when they really need to, they bring guys like Dupont and Demac and the players out wide into the game. So they don't come at you at 100 miles an hour all the time, but they're patient, they bide their time, they soak up pressure, and then they go big. So from that perspective, it will be a very interesting final to watch.
Well, I mean, I think who was at Harlequins and Bristol in the quarterfinals showed them you can hold them for so long, but when you say when they build up that head of steam and they come at you, it's not 100 miles, it's like 160 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And they're pretty difficult to stop. And it's not just one try, it's two, three, four tries. And it almost rips the game away from you. And
they do give you opportunities. They do give you opportunities, but I think they also back themselves if they go a few down that they'll come back.
Yeah, and I think, against that pack, I mean, what's that pack? Same as La Rochelle. We're talking about 950,000 kilogram pack. It's going to be interesting to see how Leinster handle that. They also came off a loss against Ulster. It was a great game to watch, and you could see there was definitely a lot of passion, derby-type passion in that.
Yeah.
And you sort of wondered how much Leinster had one eye on the final as well in that game, but... Yeah, they are a team that likes to play off continuity, of quick ruck ball, and they like to use almost the sort of remind me at times of the Brumbies at their best, where they like to use that possession to wear you down.
Yeah, and they keep coming
and they're good at that. So it's going to be very interesting. Of course, from a URC point of view, we all want Leinster to win. It's going to make that final run into the URC very interesting if they don't win, because then it's another year that they've gone without a star on their chests. And I know that's quite serious for them, for everybody in Dublin. But, I'm not quite sure. I must admit, sitting here, I'd probably favour Toulouse just on the way they could, you know, sort of 1-2 counterpunch you and just take the game away from.
Yeah, I hear you. And then you think back to the way Leinster dismantled La Rochelle. So on their day, they are irresistible. I mean, they're very, very, very difficult to stop. I mean, it's just wave upon wave of attack. But there's no doubt that Toulouse, if any side in that competition, have the fire. I'll also go Toulouse, not by an awful lot, because what Dias told us is that the Champions Cup final is almost always a tightly contested affair. And also, you have two teams here that just won't go away. So, even if if one team is up by 6 points with a few minutes to go, you can sure bet the other side is going to come hammering on that door in the last few minutes. So it'll be another tight one. But I'm going to go Toulouse by a very, very small margin.
It's going to be fascinating to see. Now, of course, Jacques Nienaber's defense is the one difference this season that they've got. Mm. How much that plays into it, knowing Jacques like he does, he'll have been obsessing about this game, and it should be really interesting to see how that ends up there. But yeah, fascinating contest. And I can't actually wait. It's one of the few games in the season you actually
can't
pick a winner, even though we have. You sort of just can't wait for kickoff, because it's one of those it's like test rugby. You're really waiting just to see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I'll even make the point that the Champions Cup final is probably closer to test rugby than most of the Super Rugby finals that we've seen. So from that perspective, it's going to be brutal. It is going to be tight. Defenses will, by and large, will carry the day. So, that's going to be a good one again.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for now. There's lots going on, and we'll be back next week with all the permutations going into the final round of the URC. We'll reflect a bit on this final as well, and possibly even have a surprise guest. Who knows? A lot can happen in a week. But enjoy the rugby, and we'll chat next week. And then, of course, make sure you open a bottle of wine somewhere this weekend.
I'll do my level best. Maybe a red, and maybe with a French label.
Yes. Well, it would be a weekend to do that. I did. I must tell you, you'll quite enjoy this. I was cleaning out a storage garage, and I found about four or five cases of quite nice wine that I'd actually forgotten I'd put in there. I'm certainly going to be seeing how they taste this weekend.
No, I hope it's a good vintage.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But that's all for this week. We'll chat to you guys all next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.